You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. As more Wisconsin residents become eligible for vaccination against COVID, more people will be on the hunt for vaccine appointments themselves. WPR's Bram Sable-Smith has been speaking with people who found appointments and has some tips.
Robin Davis was thrilled to learn her family was eligible for COVID-19 vaccines on March 1st. The 56-year-old has mostly hunkered down in her Milwaukee home with her son and daughter, both adults on the autism spectrum.
Very depressing because we've been at home 24/7.
Davis has her own physical disabilities, and all three of them are part of Wisconsin's self-directed program for adults with disabilities. That's how they qualified for the vaccine. But like many in Wisconsin, Davis was uncertain about how to book an appointment. That's when she saw a news story about a Facebook group where Wisconsinites were sharing tips about finding a shot.
And so I requested to join right away, and then I told my story. And then Bob, he said to direct message him. I did that.
Bob is Bob Orrick, a retail manager in Germantown, who started the Facebook group Milwaukee and Wisconsin Area Vaccine Hunters and Angels.
That one became like my own personal mission to get them, all three of them, vaccinated.
Orrick connected Davis with a Walgreens pharmacist he had met through the group. She and her children were vaccinated the next day. It's one of many success stories for the group that has something of a mantra: ask for help.
And to see all the positive that this page is doing and all these messages, DMs, and text messages I'm getting, that's what's been so just kind of inspiring with all this.
Scheduling vaccine appointments can be more straightforward. That doesn't mean it's easy, though. Here are some tips that other Wisconsin residents have found successful. The first is to go through your medical provider. That's what 67-year-old Lisa Kirchberg did. She got a letter from her doctor saying she was eligible and could book an appointment over the phone. She followed the instructions and received her first dose in February.
And they were very good there. You know, they had you sit for 15 minutes and, you know, it was real clean and good spacing. And, you know, some places aren't like that, but it was. So that was nice.
Each medical provider has its own system for booking vaccine appointments, and tip number two is to research where to go. The state maintains a searchable map of vaccine providers, but appointment slots can fill up fast. Bob Orrick says members of his group glean patterns revealing the best time to book at certain locations. Walgreens, for example, seems to open new appointments at 6 a.m. daily, a worm for the early birds. Orrick says they're still trying to figure out the other pharmacies, like CVS.
So they're still kind of a nut to uncrack.
Being willing to travel can possibly open up more appointments as well. Tip number three, ask for leftovers. Some providers will have leftover vaccine doses at the end of the day because of canceled appointments. Rather than letting them go to waste, Orrick says some have lists of people that can show up on short notice.
And I will tell you, it is working with people getting doses that way.
Now, if it seems like these tips for booking appointments favors the tech savvy and people with time, you're not alone. Hashim Zabak noticed the same thing. He's a founder and pharmacist at Hyatt Pharmacy in Milwaukee. Their solution is to offer walk-in appointments that allow people to forgo the online booking process altogether.
We've had slow days when we just vaccinated 50 or 60 people, and we've had some really, really busy days that we were getting close to 1,000 a day.
Regardless of how you approach it, there is one more tip for getting a vaccine. Be patient. The state is making progress, and the general population is expected to be eligible in May. Bram Sable-Smith, Wisconsin Public Radio.
And that story comes from a reporting partnership between WPR and Wisconsin Watch. Now, the massive stimulus package makes some big changes to the child tax credit, like increasing its value, expanding it to include 17-year-olds, and making it fully refundable, meaning that low-income families would get more money back. We will look into all the particulars with your questions front and center. What do you think of spreading out the tax benefit into payments versus getting one lump sum at tax time? Will the credit improve the financial outlook for your family? What do you think of how it's structured? 800-642-1234. Chris Cox is Deputy Director of Federal Tax Policy at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, a nonpartisan research institute. Chris, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me.
So a top line change here, 17-year-olds now qualify for this credit. Can you explain what else happens here? What changes did Congress make to the child tax credit?
Yeah. So a really significant part of the changes to the child tax credit is that the credit will now provide support to tens of millions of children. In fact, the law makes the credit bigger for 90% of children across the country and in Wisconsin. And this increase in the child tax credit starts phasing out or being reduced for married couples making more than $150,000 and heads of households making more than $112,500. So again, more than 90% of children or almost all families will see an increase in their benefit. And this increase is especially important to the one-third of all children, those in families with the lowest incomes, who will for the first time be eligible for the full child tax credit, even if their families have low or no earnings. And just to put this in context, today more than 10 million children live in poverty across the country. This law will lift over 4 million of them above the poverty line, a 40% reduction. And those kids will be eligible for the full credit for the first time. So this is really a historic change.
Historic change, how much will families receive?
So the law increases the credit from $2,000 per child to $3,000 for children under 18, or $3,600 for young kids age 0 to 5. And this larger amount recognizes that investing in children can have large and long-lasting benefits for both those children, their families, and our broader society. We know that children who grow up in homes with more income grow up healthier, do better in school, and earn more as adults. So this law would put money in the pockets, especially of low and middle income families, to help them support their children.
And this is also looking at spreading out payments instead of doing it all at tax time. What do these payments look like? How would that work?
Yeah, so that's another great thing about this provision. So unlike most tax credits where families get it when they file their taxes, in this case, the IRS will send half of the credit later this year, and then families will get the other half next year at tax time. So this puts money into the pockets of low and moderate income families earlier than with most tax credits. And receiving this substantial amount of money throughout the year can help families pay rent, put food on the table, keep the heat and lights on, buy diapers, and meet other ongoing costs of raising children. Now, the bill was just signed last Thursday, so the IRS needs some time to figure out precisely how the payments will be delivered and when. They'll come possibly as soon as July, but what we do know is that half of the credit will be delivered this year, and families will claim the other half when they file their taxes next year.
There's been some questions as to whether the IRS is able to, you know, to be able to rise to this challenge of spreading out this credit. Is that going to take some doing?
This is a different structure than the IRS has worked with before. So this is a big task, and the IRS knows that it has this big task at hand. So it may take some time for the agency to figure out precisely how it will be delivered. Again, what we do know from the law is that the IRS will deliver half of it this year, and families will claim the other half at tax time next year. So in order to receive the payment this year, parents should file a 2020 tax return now so that the IRS has their information. And then they'll file a 2021 tax return next year to claim the other half of the credit. So it's really important, especially for people who haven't been required to file before or don't typically file returns. It's crucial that anyone with children file a tax return to claim the benefit so that the IRS has their information.
What if your family circumstances change during the year? You have more income or less income than shown on your return that you file with the IRS?
So the way the child tax credit is structured, people with incomes up to the phase-out thresholds, up to about $150,000 for married couples or $112,000 for heads of households, the amount of their child tax credit will not change. And again, that's part of the historic change in this bill, is that no longer does the credit depend on a family's earnings, especially if they're low income, but all families up to that limit will receive the full child tax credit. So even if people's income changes during the year, as long as it stays under that limit, they will be eligible for the same amount. Where we do have concerns is if a child moves homes. So if they live with one parent for part of the year and another parent for part of the year, one parent may receive some money in advance, but the other parent may be eligible at the end of the year. The IRS has been directed to set up a way for families to report when their children move from home to home. And that's part of what the IRS needs to figure out to ensure that the advance payments and the full credit run smoothly.
These advance payments and this whole payment system, will there be reductions for taxpayers who owe back taxes or child support?
So the refundable tax credits are generally protected from offset.
Okay.
So I would need to get back to you about precisely which specific offsets would be excluded from this. But for the most part, the advance amount would come to families this year, regardless of those issues.
Your organization, the Center for Budget and Policy Priorities, it's analyzed the effects of this payment program, this, you know, spreading out payments. What have you found? Mm-hmm.
So we're talking about sizable amounts here. With the increase in the credit, families would be eligible for $3,600 per child per year for young children and $3,000 for children aged 6 to 17. As long as families are able to report their family circumstances and the IRS has accurate information, it can make a lot of sense to send that money throughout the year to help families with their ongoing expenses. What we're concerned about is making sure that people, especially low-income families, don't owe money back to the IRS at the end of the year. And this is something, again, that the IRS is figuring out as they work through the details of the bill.
Chris Cox is with us with the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities as we look at the changes to the child tax credit laid out in the federal COVID relief package. Do you understand whether your family qualifies and the income limits? Households may opt into recurring payments beginning probably in July. What do you think of spreading out the credit? Still time to talk. 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Chris Cox here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation about the child tax credit. The fact is, it is expensive to raise kids. Make no bones about it. And the child tax credit is set to undergo big changes in the American Rescue Plan, the massive relief bill signed into law by President Biden. We're learning how it compares to the current child tax credit and what it means for families this year. Chris Cox of the nonprofit Center on Budget and Policy Priorities is with us for 10 more minutes. Chris, moving to Wisconsin, what will the expanded child tax credit mean for kids here in Wisconsin?
So as I mentioned, 90% of children in the country and in Wisconsin will see their credit increase, which equals 1.2 million kids in Wisconsin who will benefit from this change. And again, the change is especially important to low and moderate income families. So previously, the credit delivered the smallest benefits to children who needed it the most. 27 million kids across the country didn't get the full credit because their families didn't earn enough. Now, this included half of all Black and Latino children across the country and half of all children living in rural areas. They didn't get the full credit because their families' incomes were too low. So the big change here is that this new law ensures that those kids get the same tax credit as kids in upper income families. And 368,000 kids in Wisconsin were in that boat. They were locked out of the full credit because their families' incomes were too low. Those kids will now receive the full amount of the child tax credit for the first time.
Does that mean that, you know, we keep hearing that the child tax credit is fully refundable for 2021? Can you explain that a little bit further, what that means?
So previously, the credit was limited based on how much a family earned and how much they owed in taxes. Making the credit fully refundable means that all families, except very upper income families, all families will be eligible for the same amount of the credit, regardless of their earnings or how much they owe in taxes. So think about it this way. Previously, if you were a married couple making $400,000 a year, you got $2,000 per kid. But if you were a single mom making $10,000 a year with two kids, you only got $600 per child from the child tax credit. It was completely upside down. The kids who needed it the most ended up getting the least. Now, families, regardless of their incomes underneath the threshold, will all be eligible for $3,600 for their young kids age 0 to 5 and $3,000 for their kids age 6 to 17. So this is such a crucial change. And it recognizes, as we've acutely seen over the last year, that sometimes when people are unemployed or underemployed, it can be through no fault of their own, and they still have to take care of their families and their children.
This sounds a bit like what other countries have done with a child allowance. What does this program look like when you look around the world?
That's right. So many high-income countries around the world have what they refer to as a child allowance, which just means that instead of getting a tax credit at the end of the year, the government provides regular income support to parents throughout the year. So in many ways, making the child tax credit fully refundable is like the U.S. catching up to the rest of the world.
When you look at the rest of the world, higher income countries, what have been the benefits? What have you found when they have provided this allowance?
So we know that children who grow up in homes with higher incomes do better in school. They grow up healthier. They earn more as adults. So child allowances really recognize the importance of investing in children, and especially investing in children who are experiencing poverty or who are in poverty for a long period of time. So expanding the credit in this way is significantly reducing child poverty in the U.S. and recognizes that the fates of millions of children are at stake.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Chris Cox, who is Deputy Director of Federal Tax Policy at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, a nonpartisan research institute. And we're discussing the particulars of the expanded child tax credit this year, what it means for families, and taking your questions on it as well. Are you a parent or a guardian of a child under 18? What questions do you have about the new payment system for parents? It's part of the latest stimulus bill, 800-642-1234. We heard from Linda, called in, couldn't stay with us. And Linda wants to know, what happens to health insurance when parents receive funds through this tax credit for children? Is this credit considered income, is what Linda is asking.
That's a great question from Linda. Refundable tax credits, which the child tax credit is, are not considered income for the purposes of other federally funded benefit programs. So receiving the child tax credit will not affect anyone's eligibility for programs such as Medicaid or SNAP or other federally funded programs.
Anne from Wales called in, couldn't stay, and Anne wants to know if families will have to pay taxes on these payments.
Tax credits are not subject to tax. So this would be, this is effectively like similar to the tax refund that families would receive at the end of the year. It's not considered part of income for tax purposes. Tax would not be charged on this amount.
Looking at politics and Congress. Do you think that the higher child tax credit has legs? Will it stay in these, you know, advance payments? Do you think this type of system will be made permanent?
Yeah, it's a really important question. I mean, look, this policy is a landmark achievement, but right now it is a one-year expansion. And it's vitally important that we make this change permanent. Nobody wants to see child poverty reduced by 40% this year and to see it double next year. So it's crucial that we continue this kind of investment, knowing that making this policy permanent would have a large and lasting impact on child poverty and on our well-being as a society.
So as this credit plays out, as this policy plays out, what will your center be watching for?
We really want to understand how to make the credit run even more smoothly, again, with a particular focus on making sure that low and moderate income households don't owe money back to the IRS by the nature of this advance payment. But we're also very excited about the anti-poverty impacts of this historic expansion and really understanding how this can make a difference in the lives of children, as research has showed it's done in other countries and even here in the U.S.
Chris, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Chris Cox is Deputy Director of Federal Tax Policy at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. It is a nonprofit, nonpartisan research institute. Just ahead, it is the filibuster. We examine the Senate's supermajority requirement, making 60 votes needed to pass most bills. Do you agree with the filibuster rule, or should it be ended? Join in 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.